Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Hi, Shereen.
Hi, Anna. How are you?
Good. I'm sitting here with my puppy, and we're excited for this episode.
Yes.
Ethnically Ambiguous.
Take it away. Introduce who we have on today. I want you to say his last name with a good Persian accent.
Yeah. We have a filmmaker. We have a mashouf in the house, baby. We got a mashouf in the house. We have a family member related to a fashion brand creator.
Which credits?
You have to listen to find out. Anyway, he's a filmmaker. He's an Iranian man. His name is Justin Mashouf. We talk about, you know, his upbringing.
Yeah.
We talk about how his family met. We talk about, you know, white supremacy in this country and what it means to grow up within it. And we talk about his experience kind of finding Islam, his work in the film industry, and what led him to make a certain documentary he made. And so much more. It's a really fun conversation.
Yeah.
I really recommend it.
Yeah, stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi, Anna.
Hi, Shereen.
How are you today? I guess we're not going to do the show anymore.
I guess since we both asked how we're doing, it cancels out. Can't answer.
Yeah. We're both bad. I'm kidding. Yeah, it's just another day. I don't understand how time works, so I don't know.
It's Thursday. According to my computer. I'm in a new setup. I'm in my dining kitchenette, if you will. I have left the bedroom studio because there's work being done on pipes in the bathroom. The shower? I don't know. There's a plumber here. So if you hear any weird noises, get over it, honey. It's quarantine.
It's called texture.
Mm-hmm.
Called texture, background noise. You know, we're all living our life.
Mostly.
That's what you get. It's the home edition of this podcast.
Yeah. And apologies to our editor, who's definitely going to text me about this. Apologies, Billy, but.
I mean, I can't hear anything yet. So maybe I just.
They're not really making any noise as of now.
Oh, okay. Well, who knows? Sorry, Billy. Also, love you, Billy.
Love Billy.
I hope he loves me too. I don't think he does. But he's like listening to this being like, I don't care about you. I just do my job.
Well, we have another great guest, Shereen. Is that not fact?
That is 100% a fact. I'm so excited to talk to him on the show today.
This guest, they're a filmmaker / documentary maker. Now, I don't know if there's a difference when you say that. Okay, there's not.
He's shaking his head. He's shaking his head.
I guess technically you're still a filmmaker, but sometimes your films are real life. There you go, baby. All right, let's just get into it because I could go on about this forever. I just think it's funny. We have Justin Mashouf on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of
thanks
course.
For doing it. Thanks for reaching out because you DM me and I was like, oh, he's going to be like, you stupid bitch. I assume anyone who's DMing me is like trying to tell me I tweeted something bad.
Oh,
and then
no.
I'm like, oh, okay. Oh, he seems nice.
No, yeah, I listened to a couple episodes of the show and then I think you followed me on Twitter and I was like, oh, this is like real life is coming into my Twitter feed. So it's fun.
Yeah. I mean, we kind of touched on this right before we started recording, but you really do. You fit the ethnically ambiguous roster, you know? I asked you about your last name because I had the impulse of saying it in an Arabic accent. And then you told me that you were Iranian. So I was like, oh, okay. But then you also told me that it's an Arabic last name. Same with Anna's last name, which is an Arabic rooted. But my first name is Persian. So we're all just a mix of everything that we're not. But we all are all of that because we're all the same. But we're not all the same, but we're more similar than
you're
not.
You're backtracking.
My point is, your name's already intrigued me. So I'd love to know more of your history and everything. And I always thought I was like an anomaly for being Arab with a Persian first name. But I think it's so much more common than it is not, just because it's like Anna's last name, for example, is Arabic. Yeah. So
Yeah, pretty strange.
Yeah, so I'm half Iranian on my dad's side. My mom is Irish German, lady from Philadelphia. And I was given the name Justin because I was born.
I used that with a laugh.
I was born, let's say, 4 years after the Iranian hostage crisis.
Yes.
And my dad was like, how about we don't give you an Iranian name?
Yeah.
And so that kind of was the vibe things were going with there.
It was between Justin and Ali Reza. And they were like, you know what?
They're like, is Muhammad not going to sit well?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, my dad just told me, like, you know, stories like when he was trying to get residency in the U.S. around that time, just trying to get jobs as a doctor. He was like, I put out like so many resumes. And then finally, when I changed my first name to Ben, people were calling back.
Yeah.
Yeah, because my dad's name is Bijan. So it was like, all right. And then he went, like, everybody in the hospital knew him as Ben, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of a shame. They force us to acclimate, and by doing that, we almost like whitewash ourselves on accident. You know, we don't really mean to, like the same way that Anna, for example, like,
yeah,
people call you Anna.
I'm known as
Anna.
So
it's like, so it's the same, but like your actual name is Anna, which I'm trying to get better at getting.
Well,
every
this
time,
is the only podcast I introduce, like, this is the only place I feel safe. So I go by Anna only on this podcast. Any other area in my life, everyone calls me Anna. And I just, like, you know, you hit a point where you're like, I guess I'm just not correcting. And that started in like first grade. I was like, fine, fuck it. Fuck all of you. I'm Anna. I will live like this.
Yeah.
And, I still, to this day, don't really care anymore. It's like, whatever. What does this name even mean? The last name, I think, is more important. The last name is blood, you know?
That's right. And I mean,
I was
and
just
also,
gonna say, I'm the opposite. Like, someone said my last name was Yunes twice, and I couldn't give a shit. Like, I was just like, they're not gonna get it right. It's fine. But I'm not gonna correct them at this point.
And I don't know if you guys have discussed this on the podcast, but I mean, in Persian, An means shit. So when somebody mispronounces Anna's name,
that's me, baby.
She gets that's right in the ears.
I'm sure
that's trauma that you've had for a long time.
You know, I compartmentalize a lot, so I don't even know. I don't even know.
You brought back like a memory. Anna's going through like a flashback as we speak.
Thank you for helping me recover.
Like the Vietnam
memory.
War hat. You know,
that is, yeah, you know, I try not to think about that because I always think, because Ana in Turkish means mother, and my dad's a Turk, so he's like northern Iran. So that I always thought was more interesting. And I also, like, low-key, I'm always like, hey, I'm Anna Hosnie. Like, literally, like, I can't help it, but, like, I want to emphasize my last name always. Like,
yeah.
Hey, I'm Anna.
First
but
name
do
soft,
not mispronounce.
Last name hard.
Yeah, don't mispronounce my last name, which is the weirdest name you'll ever see in your life because you're white. But
well, I am glad that your dad ended up getting work eventually as Ben. You know, he deserved to get the work. But
that's a classic.
I'm curious. Yeah.
I mean, I feel like a lot of young people of color have really come into, like, their names and being like, no, call me by my name. But
when
older
it comes
generations,
to getting hired, yeah,
they all have, like, their American name or their English name. Like, my mom is Shahbanu, but she goes by Bobby.
Yeah. My mom is, her name is Ruhif.
What are you
going
to do?
She goes by Rory. Yeah. My dad is Salim, goes by Sam. Yeah. You know, like,
Bijan goes by Ben. It's just what you do.
Yeah. I mean, we were having these conversations when we were naming our kids. I have two children, 4 and 2.5. And my firstborn, he is like the lightest complexion. He's got blue eyes. He's got blonde hair. My wife is Iranian also. And she does not have blonde hair. He's just very dark, dark hair. And our son is like, just looks like a Gerber baby. So we were like, Sajjad.
yeah. Hell yeah.
That's funny.
Our second son has dark hair and dark eyes, and we were like, Zachy, because because it's like, now, and they're both gonna have issues for a long time with their names.
Hilarious.
But we were like, listen, the white kid, he's gonna have the name that people are gonna be like, what's I how do I and
I like that. I love that you're already fucking with them. They don't even know. They're too young to figure it out. But when they can become adults, they're going to listen to this podcast and be like, my dad's a jerk.
It is. I do want to say it is very interesting, like within, and I've only noticed this kind of like Middle Eastern bloodlines, like you do get a mix of light and dark kids. And maybe that is actually very common in other kind of more people of color families, cultures. But like, I'm very light. My brother is dark. Like, my dad is very, very dark, like darker skin, black hair. All his siblings are pale as fuck and have light, light, light brown hair. Or in Iran, they call it blonde. And I'm like, that's not blonde.
Yeah,
nice
same. Okay, Anna, my sister, my older sister, who has literally
White girl. Your sister looks like a white girl.
If you just have light brown hair, you're blonde.
Blonde, they go blonde. And you're
shut up.
Just not blonde. It's light brown. But yeah, it is interesting how the mixture is always, it's very common. Like, you don't know what you're going to get with your Persian kids or, I guess, Middle Eastern kids.
I think also it's good to remember that we don't come in one shade, one type. Like, I have cousins with red hair, with blue eyes. My dad has blue eyes. It's just we're all, there's not, that's why I think. Yeah. That comment that's like, you don't look X, Y, or Z, because they don't really know what that means. You know, they don't know how we can be anything, you know?
Yeah.
But I am curious. I want to rewind a little bit. How did your parents meet?
My mom was actually a nurse in the same hospital. So it was just like straight up, you know, coincidental, just co-workers type situation.
A work romance.
It was a work romance. Yes.
I love that.
I'm curious, when did your dad come to America?
My dad came in the late 60s, early 70s. So it was actually before the revolution.
Right. Now, did he get caught in that sort of situation where he was like, I'm going to come get a degree and go back? Or did he plan on staying?
You know, I've actually really never asked him that. But I think his plan was always to bounce. At that point, some of my family members had already moved to the U.S.
Uh-huh.
And they were very successful business folks. And my dad was definitely not a fan of the situation in Iran during the Shah either. Not to say that he was like a revolutionary type dude, but a lot of people were fed up and coming to the U.S. with great degrees and making money. It was hard to justify the idea of, I think, going back for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my dad wanted to go back because he wanted to get an American degree and go back and like, be a baller in Iran, but like
we said the same thing.
Then the revolution happened. Then he's like, "Hell no,
never mind."
Yeah,
yeah. So your family had already established themselves in America.
He wasn't the first. No, I think he was the second of his family to come to the U.S. His elder brother had come, and he started a restaurant. And then a fashion line, and then that a fashion store.
It's called like, Breath
in San Francisco. And then that actually eventually ended up becoming BB, the brand BB. So
BB royalty? How are you going to bury the BB lead here?
Casually. Are you shitting? A little brand called BB. You might have seen it on every shirt in the 2000s. Like what?
Also, BB's Persian.
Yeah, BB's Persian. Everybody's like, it's baby, it's French. Hell no, it's BB. It means lady.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I'm going to transcend time and space. What in the world? BB royalty. Shireen, write that down. BB royalty.
I can't believe
we prefer
that
the term
you...
BB adjacent.
BB adjacent. That is wild. He's cool. Wait, how did he? Okay, this is not about your uncle,
this is the first time I've ever dropped that publicly.
And I can't believe he pivoted from a restaurant to fucking BB. Like, what?
Yeah, yeah. It's a weird one, right?
I dig it.
That's crazy. That is wild. It's never going to be the same. I will never look at that brand.
Oh my God,
same.
I just looked up BB. Was your uncle's name Manny?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's literally Manny Mashouf. Wow.
Yeah.
Wait, what's his Persian name though?
Manoucher.
Oh my God.
Manny's a good one.
His Wikipedia photo is beautiful.
Oh, I need to look at this.
Oh my God, Manny. The hat he's wearing is also, one, the most Persian thing I've ever seen in my life.
Oh my God.
To be like,
he's
I'm going to wear
stylish.
This hat.
The man Hell is yeah. like almost
I
80 years old.
I love this photo. He is a gentleman.
That is a man. It's like, I got my hat. I started a little known company called BB.
A hat with a feather in it, like a literal feather in his cap, you know? Like a,
good for him. Wow. Cool. Hell yeah.
Yeah, that's so, yeah, my ammo manny.
That's moral of the story, okay, is that you're BB royalty, as we said. But wow. But okay, I asked that because did your father go to the city that his brother was in? Or was it more just like, I'm going to do my own thing?
So my dad, you know, everybody was trying to pull him to California. My dad actually started in Philadelphia.
Mm.
And so he was not near them. My aunt, she was in New York with her husband, and they had a successful kind of like real estate situation going on. So that he was a little, you know, closer in geography to that side of the family.
Mm-hmm. Wow. You guys have family all over the country. That's incredible. Just New York real estate, BB in San Francisco, doctor in Philly, you know.
So casual, BB. Incredible. Where is your family from in Iran?
My dad is originally from Tehran. My grandmother was from Shiraz. So,
hell yeah, bro. Same.
Yeah. Nice.
My mom is Shiraz by way of Tehran.
Very nice.
Tehran by way of Shiraz. I got confused. But yeah, that's I feel like there was like a lot of people from Shiraz went to Tehran, but I think that's just because it's a big city. But Shirazi, good Shirazi to know.
Yeah, when I saw the 23, like I got it, did like the 23andMe, and it actually breaks down like your lineage inside of Iran. I was like, oh, Fars province, what? Like represent. And it was crazy. And I was like, actually, I've never lived in Iran. I don't know why I'm so excited about this. But it was something to be excited about. It was
you
cool.
should be excited. It's part of you. It's yeah. will always be a part of you.
And my wife, her mother's side of the family is from Shiraz as well.
Mm. Hell yeah. Nice. We got some Shirazis in the house. That's for my mom. She doesn't listen. She's like, I don't care. That's cool. Okay, so when did you come into the mix after your parents met at the hospital? Are you an only child?
Romance.
Like when were you born?
Yeah, so I was born in 84. My brother is 7 years older than me, half brother. So my brother's full white dude, but he lived with us. Like my mom had majority custody. So, you know, we were very close growing up. No separation of, you know, it was never weird. It was never like, this is my half brother, Jeff.
Right. Jeff. He's not related to BB. I'll tell you that. I'm sorry, Jeff. If Jeff ever listens, sorry, Jeff. You are related to BB technically. You're cool, man. You're in the fam.
He's actually, I shouldn't tell this story on a podcast, but he has he was much closer to the BB fam in many ways, like the son, Manny's sons than I was, because they're closer to age than him. So all the family parties, all the mischief that they got into was more my brother. I was just like, at that point, like, you know, 10 years
You're
old.
You're like, fuck BB.
Yeah.
I'm going to make films.
That's tough. Unfortunately, Justin, you're out. Go get Jeff, please. We're going to talk to Jeff. BB Dynasty.
Jeff, the white guy, to bring you on this podcast.
Yes.
I mean, I think it's interesting. I would actually, if I ever had like a all white half sibling, like what that experience would be to just come in and all of a sudden have like a Persian as fuck dad.
Yeah, like, it's a imagine. Really interesting. Yeah, and then comparing it to your own like biological father.
Yeah,
that's actually a whole really interesting conversation. You know, going to Iranian like Mehmoonis.
Yeah.
Well,
I could share Jeff's info.
Going from like a white family to like being like, oh, now you're part of a Persian family and culture. Like you go to the Mehmoonis, like you hang at like that's actually pretty interesting. I'm curious what that would have been like for him to also
the
just
ultimate,
be like, you're
like,
in it.
Thing was my brother's wedding when he got married. My dad's side of the family all came.
Yeah,
and my aunt, she like was wearing a white dress and just she's got the bleach blonde hair.
Of course.
And she's like straight up, I think she was kind of telling people that she was like a duchess. You know, she's like, I am like, you know, I am a duchess. And people were like, was she telling that the white get like my sister-in-law side of the family that she was like a duchess of...
She was having fun. Let her live, man.
Yeah,
that's what it is.
It's pretty amazing.
She's the Duchess of BB, okay? Let her live.
Yeah. You're the Duchess of BB, as far as I'm concerned. This is fascinating. Let's take our first break, and we'll be right back with Justin This is, I'm going to say in Arabic, mashuf. And we're back. So much was uncovered in that last segment, I can barely recover. Main takeaway is that Duchess of BB. So you're born in Philly.
Yeah, born in Philly.
Are you raised there?
So my dad wanted to retire early. He was like, I want to retire at 50 years old. And so he was like, he did it. And the way we did it, we moved to Tucson, Arizona. Oh. And, you know, basically started over. I was 9 years old. And I was like, you know, just kind of totally transplanted, which is weird at that time to like just move and start over as far as like from your social circle. We had no family in Arizona. There's not a lot of Iranians in Arizona.
I was going to say, like, demographic-wise, I feel like Philly would be more diverse than Tucson.
Yeah, but what's crazy is that, like, the homeroom that I get in middle school, and I don't know if it was by design, if they were just, like, looking at our last names, and they're like, all these wacky last names get to go to that homeroom.
Oh, wow.
98% of the Iranian kids in our middle school were all in one homeroom. And some of them were, I think it was, some of them were ASL or ESL, sorry, not ASL, ESL, English as a second language. And I thought maybe they thought like, oh, well, it'll be a good transition. But I was like, hell, woke as hell. Like, you all recognize that we had Iranian names. Like, that's crazy if you knew that. Anyway.
Yeah.
Just like kind of started building like Iranian community just from like the other kids at my middle school.
Having a white mother and an Iranian father, did you feel like you wanted to cultivate that side of you more? What was that experience like? Like, especially growing up in a really white area?
Yeah. For the most part, race wasn't a real thing to me until Gulf War-ish, right? Because based on associations, based on my name, then all of a sudden it was like, oh, you're different. Like, you're Iraqi. You're like, wait a second. What the hell are you talking about?
Right.
You know, as a kid, and you start experiencing that weirdness, and especially like I read very, very white. Like, nobody thinks I'm Iranian until when you're a kid in middle school. Often guys, they don't call each other by their first names. You go by your last name. So I was Mashouf, and immediately like that was like whoa! All of a sudden you're like in a different class of people, right? We're in this war state. And I think it's kind of like that late millennials, early millennials, I don't know, I'm 36, version of like the Iranian hostage crisis, right? It's like all of a sudden there's this like heightened tension in the Middle East and we're at war and you are of the enemy type and we're going to make you feel different about it. And that was like a really weird thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured at that point, I was like, all right, well, things are a little different here. And it was around that same time I started kind of becoming more religiously oriented. The folks that I met in homeroom, they all came from religious families. So I started hanging out with them, kind of being exposed to their circles, and just it opened a whole kind of world for me because, you know, my mom is Roman Catholic. And so I kind of grew up in that tradition, like going to church and just always kind of like rolling. I was never baptized or never like took communion. Like, she never really wanted to push religion on me, but just always going through it. I think there was like parts of it that I liked, but there was also parts that I was like, this is something is way off here. No offense to any, you know, Christian or Catholics in the audience, but I was like, I have a lot of questions here. And you know, being exposed to Islam through that type of community and through religious families, it was like a really good segue to like learn more about, you know, not just like Islam and the religion, but how Islam has impacts on cultures and that beautiful, colorful part of life that gives people values and gives people inspiration to do great things. You know, so that was all a really important time for me too. And it just like all got mixed up with everything else that was going in the world, making it more confusing, but also creating more urgency to like, all right, you need to figure this out. Like, your whole life, everybody thought you're white and you still have this privilege, but you realize that there's like a problem with whiteness. Actually, there's like, you know, racism is a real thing. White supremacy is like, I mean, I don't think I was that articulate about it then, but I realize now that it's like a sickness, you know, and a lot of white people just don't understand that it's that they have it until somebody points it out to them. And I wasn't pointed out to me until I was actually pointed out in a racist manner, you know? So I was like, oh, this is gross. And then realizing every instance of racism that happened in my life against other communities of color about, like, you know, anti-blackness, all that, it just like everything was like a shattering effect of that in my brain, you know?
Yeah. That was, you worded that so well. And I mean, we've definitely had a reckoning last year, and I hope white people especially realize, like, it's their job to unpack their privilege and to do something better with it rather than, like, you know, just be complacent and reap the benefits of a world that, like, isn't just for you. But I'm really glad that you found a community within religion. I was raised Muslim, and I think I rejected it for a lot of my life because of that. I just really hated every type of religion for a really long time. And I'm realizing as I get older, like in the last few years, especially, it's really powerful to, I'm trying to embrace it as a culture more than anything else. And I really do think I am still Muslim culturally. Like, it's a part of me, whether or not I pray to God, it's 100% a part of my life. And I'm really proud of that part of my life because it's instilled in me really beautiful things. And I know what the beauty that you're talking about too. I felt it. And I really think reclaiming that, and my dad, especially, I think he raised us, my mom and dad both, they raised us to be proud of being Muslim, not necessarily as the religion, but like he wanted us to be an example that people can look at and be like, that's the religion.
Yeah.
And that's all to say, like, I don't believe in God right now, to be honest, but I still think I'm Muslim, if that makes sense. And I think that we should allow that spectrum just in all spirituality.
Yeah.
For me, it's more of a culture than anything else. And I like that culture a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I don't consider myself religious, but I also know, like, I'm Muslim.
Yeah, exactly. No, like, that's what I'm like, trying to say. I'm you Muslim. Said everything I said. I'm just the wordy version of that.
Yeah.
That's, you want to know something weird? I was reading again for the 6,000th time because it's the only thing I have in life to hold on to when it comes to like what's going on with Iran is all the Shah's men.
All the Shah's men.
Wow. All the pres. Isn't that movie about like Robert Redford?
It's a movie that I haven't seen.
It's not about Robert Redford. It's about Deep Throat. Okay. American history doesn't matter. So not on this podcast. I remember like I had this like weird memory of like, because again, I'm a millennial. I'm 30, you know, I've always been kind of like a brat. And my whole life I was like, yeah, Islam. My mom is a devout Muslim. You know, she's like all in it. Prays 5 times a day. Says really wild shit. Like, remember, God can see you. And I'm like, oh my God. And I remember like after 9/11 happened, like, not giving into a lot of the bullshit of just being like, no, your thoughts are dumb. Like, your thoughts on Islam are stupid, whatever. Like, I was so bratty and so just like, I'm not interested in your thoughts on Islam, okay? Like, I couldn't even, like, understand the stereotypes. Like, I was just such a dumb bitch. Like, literally, like, I was just like, okay, I think I know what Islam is better than you. And I was just, like, recently just remembering, like, being in 7th grade and being such a bitch to people about Islam. Like, I was just like, oh, yeah, that's right. I was, like, an asshole about it. Like, I had, like, no patience. I just think, whatever. You don't know what you're talking about. Like, you're just stupid. And I was just, like, thinking back, like, oh, my God, I was, like, really mean. Like, was I a bully over Islam? Like, I just was just remembering that. I just, like, I had no, like, I just didn't have, like, the intelligence to process and have any sort of, like, real discussion because I was, like, what, 12 or 13? But, like, I also just had no patience for, like, people being, like, oh, Muslims, they're terrorists. And I'd be, like, you're fucking stupid. And then, like, I mean, and I'm not even like exaggerating. Like, that's how I was like that. Like, I talked like that. Home videos of me being like, Dad, you're acting embarrassing. You know, like things like that.
Oh,
where
God.
I'm like, look back and I'm like, oh my God, I was such an Americanized little piece of shit. No wonder my dad was always like, you can't go outside. like, you are the worst. But yeah, like it's so interesting how you internalize that sort of experience in America where people are like pushing back on everything you've ever known and experienced. Mm-hmm. And you're like, yeah. No, I don't think so.
I think, you know, one of the things that was really powerful for me was, you know, the experience and the story of Malcolm X, you know, reading Malcolm X, even before I learned about Islam through kind of that Iranian circle, was such a powerful message and a powerful story, because what Islam provided to Malcolm and so mm-hmm. many Black Americans was a type of, you know, global community and a type of decentering of whiteness that was so important, because so many people represent religion with the idea of the white Jesus, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. and the idea of Europe and Eurocentric thinking and all of those things. And to make a break from that as somebody who's of historically enslaved people, that, you know, I'm not just in, you know, a relative of an enslaved person. I'm actually part of a global community of the world. I'm actually a piece of this massive tree that exists and that communicates and loves. And it's much larger, actually, than these forces that are kind of pushing down on me. So that idea to me was really powerful, and it resonated with me, because there's so much in the modern lens of viewing the world. It's so limiting and it's so cynical.
Yeah.
It's like, mm-hmm. you come here, you show up, you just make money, mm-hmm. and you survive for yourself, and then you die. Good luck. You know, you have nothing else to this. And there's injustice and poverty in the world. And what does it all mean? It actually doesn't mean anything. You just try to be the one that makes money on the top, right? That's getting out of that, escaping from that mind frame is like, gives you a certain type of perspective and global, like, and just intense peace, mm-hmm. about the world and, you know, the way we should live in it.
Yeah. I only recently finished the Malcolm X autobiography. I'm not even joking. It took me maybe like 4 years to read, because I have really poor like attention span.
I mean, it's also very long.
It's long, so. But I'm also like, after I have a lot of things that I like internalize and then like have issues over, and then I have to think about for a month. And then I like mm-hmm. put the book down, like, I don't know if I'm going to finish that. And then I'm like, what am I need to finish this. But anyway, a thing that always stood out to me, which also, by the way, I'm going to start doing a new bit when I hop on, this is an aside, when I hop on Zoom, I'm going to be casually reading the Malcolm X autobiography. Like, oh my God, that's so funny.
I'm so well read. So
I don't know why.
Woke.
I just think it's stupid, because that's what every person is like these days. But anyway, and an aside to my aside, based off what you were saying, to add to that, is like a part of why I thought Malcolm X is so interesting as like this character within the Nation of Islam is that like when you, a big thing in the Middle East is, and this whole country is blending into the white, just being as white as possible. When you come to America, you come here to do as the whites do, if you will. Like literally, like that's what you're taught. Even in a different country, you are taught Western culture is the top culture, and Western culture is associated with white culture. That's what you're told to do. You come here, if you want to make money, you do as the whites do, you listen in, you don't act out, you want to be as white as possible because white supremacy. And what's so interesting about Malcolm X is that he basically was like, no, absolutely not. And I don't care if you're scared of me, because I'm so open about how I feel and what I say and what I believe in. And I always thought that's amazing, because we to this day struggle with this situation. It's the same problem with colorism. It's like you just want to be the most light skin as possible. It's why women of color not necessarily bleach their skin, but use creams to lighten their skin, to brighten their skin, because we're told that's what you want to be. It's the same problem we had when we were discussing, okay, why does, and I'm not, this is a very certain situation I'm talking about, but it relates to a lot of kind of America, when a man, and I'm talking about the George Floyd situation, why did the Arab store owner call the police on this Black man and assume the money was counterfeit? Because that person, I don't know where they're from exactly, has been taught their whole life, white is right. As far as from the whatever country they're from, That's what they're taught. And that's the problem, is we are from a very young age taught that whiteness is key. If you want to succeed in this country, you have to be like the white man. And that, I think, just what a very important thing that Malcolm X writes, or well, he, you know, whoever, Alex Haley, who wrote the book, he tells him, you can't give in to these sorts of things because that's the problem. And that's what we're all fighting against while simultaneously being sucked into it. And it's also capitalism.
Yeah, I think
just end that on that thought. Okay.
I do want to just say, like, you said Nation of Islam, and I know that he spoke through that organization for a long time, but he ultimately like Deverts. Moved away from it. And there are issues in that organization for sure. And I don't want anyone to think that we're like standing it. But at the same time, I do think that you brought up a good point, Justin. The Black Muslim experience in this country is so strong, and it's like they're so proud. And I really, they're not shying away from being visible. I think that's something that's like, well, Anna was also alluding to. It's just like, here we are, deal with it. And I want to talk about, I think it's a good segue to start talking about your film, Honest Struggle. It kind of makes sense, like your inspiration for it now. It's a documentary, but I'm sure there are reasons why you chose to focus on what you focused on. But
before we
get too into it, let's take a quick commercial break. And we're back. Okay. So before the break, I mentioned that you made a documentary, and it's called Honest Struggle. Or The Honest Struggle, apologies. And I want to talk about your decision to make this film. Tell us all about it.
So I had been finishing up my previous film, Warring Factions, which is about, it's like a personal documentary about me going back to Iran to find breakdancers. You should check it out. And we were finishing the project. And I got this email from a Christian chaplain. I believe he was in South Dakota. So he reaches out to me, and he had found my email address from a Muslim Students Association website of the university. So he was just like looking. I mean, just, it's amazing how the Google algorithms were probably so poor back then. They were like, we're looking for Muslim students to write to the inmates. And, you know, he found my email. And he's like, we're looking for, you know, some of the prisoners, they have religious questions and they want to be, you know, pen pals with people. And I was like, I am not the person, but I will like, you know, write and help facilitate these things. Cause this, you know, Christian chaplain is like the only chaplain in the prison, you know, and there's no Muslim chaplain at this institution. So I get in touch with this guy, he's a white dude, convert. And he was in a federal prison for narcotics charges. And we started writing. And I was like, this is incredible, just like that this story has come to me. And it's just so fascinating the way so much I learned about like these prison communities and this man's story. And then I just thought, you know, this is God telling me, like, you have to work on this. This is the next thing that you're going to do. So I started writing like 5 or 6 other people. And this was over a course of multiple years. So in 2009 is when I first started writing. And, you know, some of them would get released, and then I would go and visit them, and I would film some research reels and things like that. And then in 2010, I found the Inner City Muslim Action Network in Chicago. They have this amazing program called Green Reentry, in which they take, you know, men who are coming home from prison, and they give them a place to live. They try to reproduce a lot of the kind of spiritual community that they find in prison. So praying together, eating together, learning together, being in community, also kind of holding to those certain religious community standards that I'm sure could be challenging at other transitional housing. And then also giving them skills for construction in green home renovation and construction. So using solar paneling, solar heating devices, recycled materials. It's like job skills training. And I was like, this is an amazing story. This is such an amazing organization. So I got the okay from Rami Nashashibi in 2010 to focus on them. And Sadiq, who the film is about, was released in 2013. I wanted to follow somebody from A to Z through the program. and the people that in that 3-year span that Sadiq was not out, nobody really fit that mold. You know, people were coming from different like kind of work release programs, or they were coming from, you know, they had been out for 6 months to a year and they were living in the house and going through the program. And I was like, no, I need somebody that's like, literally we're following them from the gates of prison. So Sadiq was interviewed by the program. Rami told me about it. He was like, this guy is a musician, really interesting character. So we started working with him and he really opened his story up to us too. I mean, we worked with a lot of other people that went through the house, and Sadiq was just very, very open and trusting with his story. As you know, people that are coming home from prison, they're so vulnerable in so many ways. You know, you may on the outside see somebody who you may think is very tough, but there's just so much going on there that needs work. So he really trusts us with the story, and we filmed him all the way until he basically finished his parole. And so the honest struggle is that kind of 3.5-year span.
Wow. It's definitely a commitment to the story you want to tell, knowing that, like, I'm going to start with this guy's story beginning to end. It's going to take years, but this is what it's important to me. And I think it's just a great achievement, a great accomplishment. And I'm glad that you found Sadiq and he found you, you know?
Yeah, it was amazing. Yeah.
I'm curious, when did you start to realize you were interested in filmmaking when you were growing up?
I would probably say like around middle school. You know, we had like, you know, drama classes. My dad always had a camcorder, and I always loved playing with it. And we had the double deck VHS thing in our house. And I taught myself, you know, I used to love music videos. Like I would always be waiting, just watching MTV, and I wanted to record my favorite music video and then make like kind of a mixtape of music videos, all my favorite music videos, so I could watch them back to back. And so kind of taught myself in that way, kind of like, you know, editing in that way. So I was very kind of interested in kind of like the bits and pieces. And then drama classes came. I was like, the stage thing, I was like, yeah, but I have a camera. Why would I do a skit when I can actually make a movie? So like the drama teacher allowed me to like be like, oh, instead of doing a play, you know, Justin's actually going to direct a movie. And so,
that's so cool.
Just kind of like dabbling around with that was really fun. And then in high school, you know, I went to this amazing high school, very like affluent area. We had so many types of cameras that, you know, it rivaled my university that I went to, the type of equipment that I had access to. We had a media arts instructor that was just like super legit. We had, you know, multiple.
That's a dream education.
It was 100% dream, you know, like, and there was multiple tiers of the class.
Wow.
And so it's like, you didn't just take it once, then you were out. His class was so popular that like he had to create different levels. So then by the time I was like done with it, I was like in advanced studies, and you had to take community college courses to like finish the advanced media production. So it was really advanced at that stage. And I knew it was like, there's nothing else that I'm interested in other than filmmaking.
That's incredible.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I wish I went to a school like that.
Shout out to Mr. Hager of Catalina Foothills High School.
Nice. I'm always glad when people of color and they have access to equipment and to resources that can help them achieve what they want to achieve. Like, I know for me, it took me a while. Like, I'm also a filmmaker, but I definitely like struggle to even like, I don't know, even like, I feel like I'm an imposter even trying to say it out loud, because like I didn't go to film school. I'm very self-taught in like most of the things I do. But I think it's important to, and especially like I wasn't really supported by my family. Thought it was like a bad idea until I was like in my 20s. I mean, they probably still think it's a bad idea. My mom wants me to go to law school. But my point is, knowing you like something is so rare and important. I think like pursuing that is like the most important thing we can do. After basic needs, obviously, and our health and everything. But I'm just glad that you had access to that stuff. That's a dream. And I'm glad that you took advantage of that. And like you used it years later to make like an amazing film and like one of many. So it makes me happy that like not just rich white kids get to make like pursue their dreams, you know? I don't know.
But rich immigrant kids also get to pursue their dreams.
I'm into the rich immigrant kids. You know, like I think it's, I'll take what I can get.
Yeah.
What? How did your parents feel about it? Like your dad?
You know, my dad, I think, realized that it was such a like a passion from an early age, mm-hmm. That it made sense. Like, I think also I was not the best student, you know, like I wasn't terrible, but I was like super mediocre, you know, mm-hmm. like wasn't great in science, you know, always like I was very strong with like, you know, writing skills and all the creative kind of endeavors I'd always done. And the other thing too, was that my uncle in Iran before the revolution was like the head of, was very, prominent in film and television. Oh. So my dad actually like came from a family that had somebody that like worked in TV.
That's cool.
So I think it was a little bit unique. Like he was like, oh no, these are actually skills that are real. It's not just like, you know, it's not just like this fake, you know, fever yeah. dream that you're having and you want to be famous. It's like, no, yeah. it's like, these are legit things. Like you've been buying camera equipment and different stuff for years. And I know that life. My brother used to make commercials and TV shows in Iran. So it's like, sure, mm-hmm. you can do that thing.
Yeah. I mean, it is definitely a skill set. I think like I was kind of similar to you. I always had a camera on me. I was obsessed with cameras. I ended up doing like photography a lot because of that in high school. And like, I was like in a lot of photography classes, but my parents knew I liked that stuff. They just didn't know that I wanted to pursue it. You know, like, yeah. I think that's the difference. I feel like my parents didn't even like know how to describe what I wanted to do to the family because they were just like, she's doing, I don't know, producing or like whatever, like, yeah. like tahrij, like she's doing something in filmmaking. Or like TV world. And even now I'll have like extended family be like, when are you going to put me in a movie? Because like they're just, they think I'm like fucking around or something. But, and I mean, and if you're having fun, it kind of should feel like you're fucking around. But
you should be like, no special treatment. You will have to audition with the rest.
Exactly. Okay. But that's cool that you had some type of like familial history back in the old country. That's kind of neat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder if our families knew each other because I have an uncle who works in film and television.
What?
He always sends me DVDs of like the most Persian hilarious comedies that he worked on. And I'm like, they're nice. So weird and so Persian of like, it's like slapstick, but like they're like mullahs, but they're wearing like cool sunglasses. And you're like, yeah, what is this comedy?
Is this from back in the day too?
It's probably like from like early 2000s. Like oh, he's okay. been working.
Not that long ago.
He's been working like, I mean, you know, he's my mom's younger brother, but he's still probably like in his 50s or early. Gotcha. Yeah, probably 50s about.
Mm-hmm.
And but nice. He, I don't know. It's the comedies in Iran are all like really silly. Like it's all like very over the top. I mean, everything is in our culture. Yeah. Everything's over the top.
We as people are generally yeah. over the top.
Yeah. Well, are you working on anything right now? I know, obviously, the past year has made filmmaking a little bit difficult, like set-wise and stuff, but yeah. do you have anything in the works?
You know, I'm trying actually to develop a documentary course right now. I want to try to kind of give back a little bit and, you know, teach a tad. I have a feature length script that I've been working on for years since like college. I feel like I have Same. No good, I have no good ideas after college. It's mm-hmm. like my first film was from college. Technically, the Honest Struggles idea came from college. Mm-hmm. I have nothing else after college.
Oh, no.
So that's something. I've been consulting on a potentially you know TV series. You know, everything in L. I mean, you know how it is in LA. It's like you're always yeah. like kind of have your foot in like a project yeah. and then it yeah. may take off. It may not take off. You never know. But, yeah. You know, I have a couple things, but, you know, nothing at the stage that I can talk about yet.
What made you decide to try teaching?
You know, I was asked to teach I was asked to do like a guest lecture at the University of Arizona around character-driven documentary. And I kind of liked it. I kind of liked doing it, liked interacting with the students. And
mm-hmm. maybe having a good teacher in high school made you be like, yeah, you know,
that's true.
This affected me. I'm analyzing you.
also, I think too, as like a Muslim filmmaker, I think there's not enough of us that are actually mm-hmm. like making ourselves accessible and are making our ideas accessible when there are people that are eager for the information. So like rather than them, you know, consuming that from some random, I don't know, YouTube or, you know, some like liberal arts school, not to say that I'm like better than another teacher per se, but like, I feel like there's a lot of value that we bring in storytelling, you know, especially when we're talking about telling our own stories. So, you know, giving that, those tools to the next generation of storytellers is really important, because otherwise they make the same mistakes that you and I maybe have to go through.
I mean,
you know, it's like
to that effect. I think if I had had a Muslim or a brown Arab Persian teacher, filmmaking, photography, anything like if I saw, it's not just accessibility, but it's also visibility. You know, I think it's really important to be like, I can do this, and so can you, because a lot of kids don't know they can do that because it's just not accessible to them, or it's, they don't think it's realistic because they haven't seen it done before. So I think it's a great thing to, we need more teachers like that. So I feel like I like it.
I never had a brown teacher who taught art that I was like into. Like the only like really, really good teacher I'll never forget was a math teacher of mine, who was this Mexican man who was so fucking cool. Never forget G. He went by G. His name was Mr. Gonzalez, but he always goes, call me G. He's just like a cool guy. It's just nice. Which you're like, I'll never forget you. But you, it's the only class, only math class I ever got an A in, because I just like the teacher. Like, I am notoriously bad at math. Let's get my dad on to really hammer that in. But like the only, like even my dad was like, I'm sorry, you got an A in algebra? What the hell? Like, what is, you don't know math? And I'm like, I know, it's the teacher, man. You gotta get teachers like this.
Like, you liked him, so you paid attention and you did the work. Like, but also, but you're right. Every art teacher I ever had, white.
Fun 100% fact.
Art history, white. I mean, actually, no. Art history, I did have a very lovely Japanese woman, Mrs. Tanaka. Love her. But other than that, as far as like physical making art, all white.
Can I tell you a fun fact about Mr. G? He's notoriously hated on by comedian Hasan Minhaj, who also had him, because he was the basketball coach and he cut Hasan. And now Hasan always, you see it in his stand-up, will be like, see, told you, Mr. G. I told you I'd make it. I'd be like, bro, leave Mr. G alone. He was like the best teacher we ever had, dude. I'm sorry he cut you from the basketball team, but he actually was a legit dude. Leave the poor guy alone.
I mean, I'm sure they're on good terms, and like Mr. G kind of still, like can take funny. It and like knows that he's playing around.
He's like, well, you're really fun. You weren't a good basketball player. It is what it is.
Yeah.
Shout out Mr. G.
Yeah. Shout out to every good teacher, and shout out to your future teaching path and to all the projects that hopefully get made that you're working on.
But yeah, everyone should follow you and see what you do next. And check out Honest Struggle. And sorry, what was the name of the movie you said before?
Yeah. Oh, Warring Factions.
Warring Factions.
You can
Factions.
Find it at check warringfactions.com.
I'll link it below. Warring Factions.
And we'll link your socials and the Honest Struggle.
Yeah, everything.
All the good stuff. But
question though, before we close out, I mean, I guess I should watch, but I'm curious what it was like finding breakdancers in Iran, because if you guys don't know, like sort of like dancing and music and stuff is not really allowed in Iran right now under the current regime.
It's complicated.
You gotta watch
the movie. Yeah, I mean, you know, breakdancing has a little bit of a different kind of classification, because in the 90s, maybe even in the late 2000s, I'm messing up my Iranian b-boy history timelines. All the Iranian b-boys are gonna be like, you told it wrong. Basically, you know, they were, you know, being kind of ostracized and had issues, were, you know, getting arrested for just like trying to practice. And then eventually somebody had the idea to kind of like federate it as a sport. And basically, they've very kind of like keenly changed the name of what they were doing. They didn't call it breakdancing. They call it aerobic herfei, which
aerobic
means
exercise or something?
Professional aerobics.
Oh.
So they were like, gave it like a name that was like, okay, like we'll do the paperwork for this.
Like exercise and, or like whatever.
Yeah,
exactly. A professional sport or something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then so they were able to federate as a sport and get like some type of kind of government oversight of mm-hmm. what they were doing. And then at a certain point, we're able to actually have open competitions in like schools and gymnasiums cool. and things like that. So it's, you know, it's actually really weird. I mean, you can see kind of some of it in the film. I don't really go into the weeds of it in that respect. The film is kind of more about Iran, US relations and identity mm-hmm. and that stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a fascinating world.
That's, I mean, I'm glad cool. you made a film about it because I don't think a lot of people realize that that's such a, I mean, yeah, like there's the concept, like you're going to Iran to find breakdancers. Like that's, yeah. But yeah, check everything out in the description. Follow Justin. But for everyone that wants to follow you, tell everyone where they can find you on the internet.
Please.
I'm on the tweeters at Mashouf, M-A-S-H-O-U-F. The Instagram is J Mashouf. And the Facebook is J Mashouf.
Who uses Facebook? I'm kidding.
Yeah, all the olds.
But thank you again so much for joining us and telling us about your work. This was lovely. Yeah.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah. Ladies. Guys.
We're guys.
Guys prefer it. Guys.
I actually do, but that's just me.
Friends. I actually hate using, I hate when people say, hey, guys. It's like, all right, let's do something else. Let's say friends.
Okay, you could keep doing that.
I like mamani. I always say mamani. I'm like, hey, mamanis. Oh, and that's also man. Because I only hang out with my dog and cat. So I'm always like, mamanis, come here. And then I started doing it with like, I was on a Zoom with my friends and I was like, hey, mamanis. And they were like, I'm sorry, what?
Like, what does that mean? What does it mean?
Can't tell you. You gotta be a little mama need to know.
Which it's just honestly what brown moms call their babies.
That's cute.
Kids. Makes no sense.
Well, we love all our mamonies.
Mama
all of you out there. And this is Ethnically Ambiguous. It's Ethnically Amb, A-M-B on Twitter. And Ethnically Ambig, A-M-B-I-G on Instagram. I'm Shireen. It's Shirohiro on Instagram and Shirohiro666 on
my
Twitter.
My mamani made it.
Beautiful.
Isn't it classic Persian dog? Everyone has their little white dog.
Always the white dog.
And I accidentally got one too. Didn't realize until all of a sudden I was at a Sizdapadar and I was like, oh, my dog looks like every other old Persian woman's dog. Oh, I guess I've fully.
That's hilarious.
I am becoming the old Persian woman I thought I would become with my little white dog that I call my mamani and he eats kebab and he's a sweet little boy and he's my son. And he's
also,
the king of the
it's
family.
Anna Hosni on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, I'm at Anna Hosni on Twitter. Sorry. I'm just showing everyone my little mamani. Guys,
no one can see you right now.
Nobody can see your dog.
But everyone knows he's adorable and you will become your parents. Just give in. Okay, guys, there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah. And until next time, go watch The Honest Struggle and Warring Factions and get informed. Watch a good movie.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.